The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a story about one man's journey from death row executioner to Lutheran pastor. It's titled The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace. You can check it out at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Executioner's Redemption is on sale for $12.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, The Executioner's Redemption.
Time to go length of the court with Archie Diacono. 3 seconds at midcourt.
Well, Jenkins
gives it to Jenkins for the championship.
TBS announcers Jim Nantz, Bill Raftery, and Grant Hill. With the call of the game-winning shot in last night's NCAA tournament championship game, many people excited about it. I don't even follow basketball, and I watched it on television. For me, it's baseball. And when baseball season started, as it did on Sunday afternoon, I left church early to get home to watch the first pitch. And I love my Cardinals. I will make every effort, and I'm serious, I will make every effort to watch every game. I won't do it, but my wife will tell you I will make every effort to watch every game this season that the Cardinals play. I'm a fan. That's a harmless thing, isn't it? We're going to be talking about pop culture, and in particular, our sports-dominated culture with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. It's a regular series with him. He's pastor of St. John Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Sunday afternoon, I was there sitting in the recliner, and I was watching that game from beginning to end. The second game of the season is tonight. I am actually balancing whether or not I'm going to go to my son's choir concert or go home and watch the game. I'm just a fan, Jonathan. It's harmless. What are your concerns?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I got two answers for you, Todd. First off, you're saying you're going to watch all this Cardinals stuff. What's my concern? Well, if I'm a Cubs fan, I'm pretty sure you're going to hell, you know. And then there's the more realistic side of this, which is at what point does entertainment start destroying real life, right? You left church early. Okay. Is this something that would be acceptable for any other particular action? What if I said that, you know, I'm really hungry, I need a hamburger, I'm going to leave church early? You'd probably look at me funny, like, you can't wait 10 minutes, right, to get to the end of it?
Well, I didn't leave the service, but I did skip out on Bible class.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't teach it.
So you said Bible class. I don't know. What it is, I think, that is most concerning to me would be anyone who would say about anything in a consumer society, it's neutral, it doesn't affect me, they're blind. They're more affected than anybody else is. I don't want to come on here and attack sports. I'm a sports fan, too. I'm actually beating myself up today because I somehow managed to forget the game was on last night, and so I missed a great game. I can't believe what an idiot I am. But there's also this edge where all of our entertainment in this country demands more of us than entertainment or leisure ought to be able to. It demands a greater allegiance than you would think would be reasonable. And this is far broader than just a matter of, you know, I'm going to watch a bunch of games. It begins to affect even the most vulnerable among us, particularly the way in which we have pressed upon our children success in sports as a major barometer of success in life. And the way that we will sacrifice their childhoods in some extent to try to prepare them for that success. The way that, you know, you leave church early to go watch a game, but how many families now are willing to miss Sundays at a time or even months at a time in order for their kids to be participating in the sports which are only available on those Sundays, which long ago, of course, were sacred, but aren't anymore. So unless you're somehow superhuman, you really can't be an objective observer of society. It's not possible. You're part of it. And corporately, We have an addiction to sports. We have an addiction to leisure of all kind, entertainment of all kind, but sports has a very, very high rank, to the level that I have never seen anything quite so much a pagan worship experience as the halftime at the Super Bowl, and where the announcers come on afterwards and we'll talk about how meaningful and marvelous it is. And the entire event is supposed to be this sort of like once-in-a-lifetime, earth-shattering reality. And then we do it again next year with two different teams and all. But, you know, why the idolatry of it? Why is it more than just a game? And it's that that should disturb us a little bit.
So what we're talking about here is kind of our affections that that lead us to kind of fan loyalty, to like to watch certain players or certain teams. That in and of themselves, if they were truly controlled, like our affections ought to be, would not be harmful to us or to others. But we don't control them.
No, we're a society spinning out of control, particularly in our affections. That's a good use of that word. Our passions is the way the New Testament would talk about this, and not as a positive thing, that the passion of man's will, his is a way of describing the emotions he doesn't have control of, which then dominate his actions, whether it be in thought, word, or deed, driving him to do things which, if he were in his right mind, if he were in the fear of the Lord, he might not otherwise do. And we're a society not just pursuing our passions, but we are wholly given over to them. And to the point where, and you see this on the further end of things, that you know, marriage and homosexual marriage and divorce and cohabitation, that's not directly connected to sports, I don't think. But the way that we are willing to let our emotions be our chief barometer or teller of truth is connected to both of those things. And that the sports as a rush of entertainment, as a place of fulfillment, is so important to us, is really stunning, given the history of humanity. And how fleeting life is, how painful, and what a struggle life has been for so much of humanity, that we can give ourselves so much over to this nothing but leisure is a real blind spot, at the very least. And again, becomes dangerous at the point where you begin to sacrifice what's real for these dreams. You know, I think it's very common today for me to hear somebody bemoan a video game player for not having enough reality, or somebody who likes to watch movies or fantasy fiction or anything like that for being out of touch. But the sports world is the same thing. It's just a different version of it, right? It is an escape. And there's nothing wrong with a little escape here or there, but if your whole life is a matter of trying to escape, what is the difference between the avid fan who not doesn't just watch every game but is reading the stuff all day long, listening to radio about it all day long, memorizing everything, and then the addict of any other thing that would be a substance that would destroy their life? What if when that fan's life is destroyed, the marriage is on the rocks, the kids are not being paid attention to? And this does happen. And it happens not just with sports. It does happen with video games. You can document it, and it's dangerous in that regard. Why do we have a blind spot, though, with sports? It's as if the sports can't be wrong. And that's the real terror, I think, in a certain way. Because then when it becomes something that we're going to make our kids do, you know, a 10 or a 12-year-old giving 15 hours a week to something like this, traveling everywhere, and as if they're a pro or as if they're going to be a pro, we maybe are a little misplaced in our affections at that point.
Talk about our kind of corporate devotion to sports. And, you know, the United States is not unique in this. We just have devotion to different sports usually than other places in the world. But talk about it as kind of substitute church. It seems to have all of or many of the hallmarks of religion. It has kind of a camaraderie, a fellowship that is established around a certain, you know, set of rules and spectacle. It has its own saints and venerated priests. Huh. It has, you know, the stirring of passions and things like that. It talk about kind of this our corporate devotion to sports as substitute church.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I hadn't thought about it in these terms, Todd, so thank you. It's more religious than religion. Religion's supposed to be spiritual today, right? It's private. There aren't any rules. There isn't any liturgy. I do what I want and what's right for me. Try that at a basketball court. Try that at a game. Try, you know, don't stand up during the seventh inning stretch. You know, don't try to catch the ball that's coming your way or what have you. In every single one of these situations, the devotion to the ritual is incredibly religious, in the best and worst sense of the term. And the impact of that emotional high that the religion gives and promises to give, the fact that, and this is the case. You walk in. Walk down the street of Cincinnati and you see somebody with a Cardinals shirt on, you're going to feel like you found a brother, right? You're going to maybe even talk to that person, you know, maybe not. But some people would. They'd feel very, very close. And I'm not sure we even have that kind of camaraderie in the local church. Maybe some do, and maybe with some of the people there. But that commitment is altogether lacking. I have joked in the past, I've always said, you know, I think I could grow a mega church. I really could. What I would do is I would buy a professional sports team, and I would have them play a game every week, and I would easily have an assembly of 20 to 30,000 people showing up. I just call it assembly in Greek or in German, and I'd have the word church, right? That's easy enough to do. But to try to gather that many people or to gather any people around true religion is a different thing. Now again, I think you got to be careful though, because someone could be listening to this and easily say, you know, wow, they're being really pietistic here. They're saying you can't watch sports or you're participating in false religion. That's not what I want to say at all. But I am saying that the culture in which we live in, and this is your question, I think it's right. It has replaced religion with sport, and that this is not unheard of in the history of the world either. You know, the games of old in Rome were very much a satisfaction for the masses, even invoking gods of war and whatnot. So it's not unheard of. And again, I always am asking, what's this doing to our kids? What does it mean to them? Why is it that I know for certain that a certain member or congregant, that his son will be a fan of the same team he is, but I'm not as certain that his son will be in church in 20 years, and it's because he's not in church in 20 years. What is it about the sport that is so important that we will pass it on generation to generation, but our religion has lost that meaningfulness? I just don't think you can underestimate it. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer either, in the sense that you don't just cut off yourself from the society you live in. You do want to be aware of what your neighbor is involved with and whatnot. But we certainly, as with all parts of entertainment, moderation is kind of the key. And there's a point where the excess verges on idolatry.
We're talking with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, our biweekly series on pop culture today, our sports-dominated culture. I want to talk a little bit about how especially Christians may value the rules and the regulations of sports than the doctrines of the Christian faith when we come back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our series on pop culture today, we're talking about our sports-dominated culture. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest, pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. You can purchase this book by calling Concordia Publishing House. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jonathan, I'm kind of mystified by this, and I've observed this for several years, that people, especially Christians, let's talk about Christians in particular, would probably be more upset if instead of singing the national anthem at the beginning of a sports event, a baseball game, for instance, someone just sang some other song. But they're not worried when they go to church and think, and you know, the holy things get changed around. They would be aghast if the National League actually adopted the designated hitter rule. But they don't care if the pastor changes the creed on Sunday morning. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that that's quite spot on. You know, the national anthem, you run into issues of patriotism a little bit there too, and that's its own issue. Both in its good and in its bad forms, but I think especially then when you mention like the doctrines, changing the rules, it is pretty amazing. I can just imagine. I know I've done it myself, yelling at the ref through the screen, you know, through the TV screen, you know, that shouldn't be that way. It's a bad call, and it's going to ruin the game, right? And when would your average Christian be that bothered about a point of truth coming from a pulpit? Would they be? Could they be? Could they even conceive of caring that much about it, that you would stand up and yell? Now, I know as a pastor, I've been in that situation. I guess I'm a nerd in this regard for theology. I've been in sermons where I'm just fuming. I can barely sit in the pew. I want to get out of there so bad. But I think the pastor is not, you can't really judge with the pastor. He's a unique breed in this. But wouldn't it be wonderful if Christians could be just, you know, slightly that passionate about what we believe, teach, and confess, that they would be bothered when they hear somebody, whether it's the Discovery Channel or whether it's at the Christian bookstore, denying a real and clear truth of Scripture. How much have we drunk the potion of tolerance? And isn't it interesting that tolerance has no place in sports? You know, there's a point with the kids where we're trying to give them all trophies for everything that they do. But at the same time, you know, at our national level, you know, you try having a North Carolina run out today and say, we deserve the trophy as much, cut it in half, give it to us too. It ain't going to happen. Right? There's no tolerance for losing here. So very, very different way of looking at the world. Maybe, and this is maybe another topic for another time, but this may have to do with masculinity needing to retreat. That we live in a culture so dominated by the feminine, which includes then the diminishing of competition and the leveling of all things, the softening of all things, that sport is sort of the retreat for the male, where he has gone to kind of exercise his warriorness that he's not allowed to do anywhere else. That might be worth thinking about, but it doesn't make the overreaction or the overdevotion to it right, and it certainly doesn't alleviate the Christian's duty to know what they believe and why they believe it. And if we can't have affections about our religion, well, then why do we have that religion at all?
Talk a little bit about, because if you go to a live sports event, especially those up at the national level, you'll quickly realize there's a liturgy, and it's highly orchestrated. It's highly manipulative. If the crowd starts to flag, things aren't going our way, there are certain musical cues, all sorts of things that are done in order to keep the fan sitting there in the bleachers, I almost said the pews, the fan sitting there in the bleachers, kind of engaged and excited. And the same thing happens on Sunday morning in a lot of mega churches too. What's going on, Jonathan?
Right. Well, the philosophy of revivalism, going back to Charles Finney, has always been that it is meet, right, and salutary to manipulate the average human being into Christianity by any means possible. He called those means the new measures, and for him it was about how you managed your music and how you managed your charismatic presentation, your speaker. To this day, it is kind of now joined or fused with the church growth movement, which has other channels running into that stream, but the so-called praise and worship style is at its root about manipulating the affections of the human to believe God is present and to be committed to that God, often particularly committed to financially supporting the place where the manipulation takes place. In sports, I mean, they got that down pretty well, because people in a consumer culture, in an entertainment culture, we're short attention spans. We check out, right? And so you have a timeout called at a basketball game. You can't have all those people ceasing to pay attention and not there when the team gets back on. Home court advantage is huge, and there's more money to be made here. So you got to keep them focused. So they have all sorts of little stuff you don't see when it goes to commercial break, trying to keep the people somehow engaged with what's going on the court. It's almost the three-ring circus ideas. If you get bored with one ring, look over here. There's something else going on. You can't possibly check out forever. So the connection is clear that if you want attention of Americans, you need to manipulate their affections. And that is something the church has adopted as well. It doesn't make it right. And I think the ultimate question becomes, why doesn't truth affect our passion the way it should? And then, again, why are we so distracted and so willing to be distracted by things that pass and aren't even remembered the next year, unless you are, in fact, a true fan, a radical, as it were?
Folks, you can listen to Pastor Jonathan Fisk making the case for the Lord's Prayer, something he's passionate about, at the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Attendance is limited to 400. Registration is $100. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June the 10th and Saturday, June 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Pastor Jonathan Fisk, thanks for being our guest.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to have Dr. Frank Beckwith answer the question, if abortion becomes illegal, should both abortionists and their customers be punished? We'll also get our weekly update on the November elections with journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.